Sometimes we notice how much we're moved by past habit energies or biology. And sometimes we notice that we're just moved. And I would love to hear from you. What moves you? And what is it like when you're moved? And somehow this feels especially a precious topic in a room with so much stillness to talk about moving.
If I could play piano, just wanted to play. It just felt like an overwhelming sense of bubbling up inside of the sparkle inside connecting with the sparkle outside.
What stopped you?
I did. I played on my own. And then when I walked by the house just a few minutes ago, I was like, oh yeah, I wanted to play piano. I found Claire's little dog inside the house and played with that till it snapped at me. So I don't know what it was that moved me. It was just this sort of overwhelming.
But what if you do know and you just try to describe it, even if it's hard to put into words?
It feels and it felt altogether like a deep sense of self-love, self-appreciation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That there's nothing wrong, mm-hmm. And that there's no difference between me and the tree and the leaves and the sunshine. It's all the same. And that was a sense of celebration that was coming from that place.
Okay. Was someone over here raising a hand? Anyone feel like speaking?
I know for something that I haven't done is kind of re-immersion. It's just
sorry, I missed that.
This is something that I haven't practiced much recently, but that's really become alive is the kirtan, kind of the chanting.
Mm-hmm.
I know for me that. But just when I experience that, it's so interesting. When I'm really present, it's like it just is. And as soon as I have a thought,
mm-hmm.
something, you know, I get caught back into separateness.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just reminded about how connecting that experience is for me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Can you describe? Like you said, that kind of presence, that nowness, anything about what your body feels or how your mind feels or how you perceive when there's not a sense of separation.
Yeah, I think what just came to mind was that idea that it was really that the concepts and all that is it's not there, it's really just coming through me,
mm-hmm.
and not really doing.
Okay. And how does that, it's really nearly impossible, but can you also describe what it feels like? Again, body, mind, sense, smell. Any word, even if it doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Are you asking what I'm asking for?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It could be either, but maybe we could start with, like, if you feel any symptoms of the sense of not separate. Symptoms in the body or quality, texture, if at all. But it's not that you need to go, like, pushing around trying to find the word. Just keep kind of opening. If there's not a word, that's also a word, kind of.
When I was thinking about that, they're just part of, I think, just really rooted, yet also dissolving.
Yeah. Okay. Anyone else?
When I play like a child, with a child, and see through their eyes, and feel that commonality where it's just magical.
Mm-hmm.
I feel it with animals as well.
Mm-hmm.
And my heart just gets really big. Sometimes I feel a tear come out, like the best kind.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just such a sense of being real and being in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
Mm-hmm. Can you feel, so this question, if it at all applies, what moves you? What moves through as play?
What moves me and what moves through as play?
Mm-hmm.
Like rolling around on the ground or down the...
Yeah, so what moves you rolling around?
Huh?
What moves you rolling around?
What moves me?
Mm-hmm.
Are you talking about physically or internally?
Both.
I love that feeling of feeling all my body's soft edges against the ground and feeling that that animal, knowing I'm an animal, knowing I'm a plant, knowing I'm the mineral, just like just going around and getting all that grass in my hair and doing it with another child and then us laughing together. This is so cool. It's the wildest instinctual creative self that I really am deep down without all that stuff. It's just pure play. And that's what I miss when I'm around so many adults.
Yeah.
And myself as well. I don't want to play.
Yeah.
And it's so beautiful. I just feel so natural.
Mm-hmm.
When I talk about it.
Mm-hmm. And that beautiful way that you described, like feeling you are touching your shoulder, and you said like the softness and the edges, or the soft edges meeting the ground.
Yeah.
Can you describe that? Like, why is that so delicious?
That's how yummy comes from. There's a merge and there's a contact where there's me and then there's the earth as well, but there's this the ground and I are, it's like we're moving together almost as a wave and we're making love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just as sweet and awesome as can be. It's so innocent and so rich, it's like it's everything almost. I feel so connected and so much space for me to be who I am.
Okay. If some people had their eyes closed, so she did like this. And you were saying kinnies, and then you just went like this.
Kinnies?
It sounded like, so I was just curious what word was coming when you did that.
I said maybe these were kinesthetic.
Kinesthetic.
Yeah, I was like, sometimes the words don't really work for me.
So. Yeah, yeah. I was just curious what
was really not my way.
describe it. I mean, like, we dance around it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we never, I mean, can we describe what it...
Well, what do you feel as you're listening?
That we're dancing around it.
Mm-hmm.
That it's...
See, because I feel like we're describing it. That's what I feel.
Yeah.
And it can't be described.
Yeah.
But we're describing it. And it's not that the words are describing it. So it's kind of like being in here in this moment. We can catch the wave sometimes. Mm-hmm. There was one thing, a statement that I liked that could sound kind of like argumentative and mental, but someone was saying, there are descriptions of the ultimate that say it's indescribable, but that's too limiting. To say it cannot be described. It doesn't mean that any one description it says it all as what it looks like, but in that experience of the moment, we could say we're describing it with that way. Just like describing can be also describing a line, describing a way, like as an experiential catching the way. So, but yes. Okay. Dancing around it.
And describing. Yeah, I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
Today, I was doing some movement.
Yes.
It started as, you know, what's labeled as Qigong.
Okay.
And then this vibration started happening in my body, and I just started shaking.
Mm-hmm.
In my legs, and then it was in my hips, and then it came up into my body and my head, and it felt so delightful and so delicious and so sensuous that it just didn't want to stop.
Yeah. Did you stop?
I did.
But you didn't stop it. It just ran its course, we could say. Okay. So this, in a way, if we can take your that progression of events to talk about, to help us. So we're doing a practice that we've learned from somewhere that is a rich, wise tradition. But as we're doing it, we could sometimes say that we're dancing around it. And then, but because we're dancing right around it, we can catch the wave. And then the wave comes through. The danger of that is to make too much of the wave or whatever, but that what I hope to point out here is to understand what technique is for better. It can help us get dance really close so that we can catch the wave like you did. So, do you think that you described being moved? Does it feel like you described?
Almost like we can talk about it, but really it's the experience of it that gives us something to describe, and yet in that description we really can't experience it. Does that sort of make sense?
Well, but that's interesting, because then what if my vocal cords are being moved by it? So definitely, usually a description is kind of aside and dancing around. And then we need to kind of be willing to fall into the wave or make the leap, you know, like, or the jump rope thing. But even if someone is describing and it's a description that's coming through being moved by it, listening, it's like, are we going to fall for it?
Yeah.
Are we going to be touched?
Aren't we it?
Aren't we?
Already?
Aren't we?
Yeah.
So then?
When we say dancing around it or trying to connect it, I think that even in our worst dodgiest day when we're in the middle of all the city shit and can't get around to meditation in this room so far away from any conscious thought. We're still it. That's it.
Mm-hmm. So, go on.
And I suppose the reason we're here and so many people are in rooms like this throughout the years is to be able to clear away that city shit, to see that it is happening right now, and it already is.
Okay. And what do you mean by clearing away the city shit? Because then the city shit is it.
Yeah.
So then...
Yeah, that's the problem with that.
But it also is...
I say it's not like cleaning a mirror or cleaning a window, because there is no mirror. Or the mirror is it, and the stuff on it is already.
Mm-hmm. So then...
I guess when I meant clearing away the distractions, you may say those are it too, but the distractions that we place in front of it so that we don't feel the
mm-hmm.
the wave. But those are also, that's what's happening, that's it too.
We can catch a wave any time.
Yeah.
But there is a difference between, in our experience, when we're, delicious, delightful,
mm-hmm.
intimacy, making love with the universe,
yeah.
as opposed to... there's a difference between bearing, that word that we had the first evening, Maestro Eckhart, enduring, bearing that deliciousness
mm-hmm.
in the face of adults,
mm-hmm.
in the face of ourselves, as Holly was saying, in the face of city shit. If so, it's like where the mind could come to a place of stillness that it's not making. So Dogen talks about it's very, the way is so easy because it's everywhere. But as soon as the mind makes the slightest hairbreadth distinction,
mm-hmm.
or we could, I think what he means is like prejudice,
mm-hmm.
we're in hell. So we don't want to be confused by what we think about being it, but let ourselves be called deeper and deeper and deeper into the wave. And there is that where it feels so good. And so then why, if we're supposed to be such pleasure seekers, why aren't we there?
Mm-hmm.
All the time. Knocking, at least. What do you think?
It reminded me when I first, before I ever studied meditation,
mm-hmm.
before I ever sat a course, I was reading Gary Snyder, and he talked about the one-breath meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, whatever you do, wherever you are, stop, inhale, exhale, and keep going. And I was working a waiting job in the city, and lots of city shit. And it was so wonderful to, in the middle of, 9:30 on a Saturday night, to stop in the middle of the floor.
Mm.
Inhale and exhale, and keep on running. Martini is in my hand.
Yeah.
But it made me able to get through that
mm-hmm.
that time.
Yeah.
And I think of that when you say that finding the path to allow yourself to go to the delicious.
Yeah. Well, we also we want to find our path to the delicious. But I think that what's mostly missing is the willingness, the receptivity to the path. Because, it's true, the breath, just any time, breathe. And know that you're breathing. But maybe because it doesn't cost anything or whatever. and it's not supposed to be like the lightning path to the ultimate, according to so and so. So we are not so inspired. So I think that the inspiration is probably more important than what path, even though the inspiration will take us to the particular path that's calling. There's this really tricky quotation, speaking of so-and-so's, Dalai Lama. That we can take in a harmful way, so let's not do that. Someone was asking him about Christianity. He was saying that Buddhism seems to have so many helpful tools for overcoming suffering. And what do you think about Christianity's focus on suffering? And the Dalai Lama said, His Holiness said, suffering is not overcome by leaving pain behind. Let me just stop there first. There's another sentence. I just wonder if sometimes our lack of caring for ourselves, so this creature that knows what's delicious, that we somehow stop from going there. We're not caring that much about this. I wonder if it's partly because we can't be motivated just to get rid of this much suffering. That's not interesting enough. That's not big enough. Just to get rid of my own suffering. Not to take that only in a negative way. Like, it would be great if we could care that much about one being, because that will spread out to other beings. But I wonder if somewhere we're kind of really waiting for the real challenge. That we know this suffering is not in any way separate from that suffering. And the suffering that has been and will be. And maybe what's missing, okay, we're maybe sitting around like adolescents, kind of trying to be cool and not falling for the shit. But, and knowing somehow what's true, but not like, let's say adolescents in this culture, the mainstream one. Not having much to go on to formulate what would be worth giving everything for. And not holding back. So the second sentence in what His Holiness says, well, I'll repeat the first one first. Suffering is not overcome by leaving pain behind. Suffering is overcome by bearing pain for the sake of others. So I guess you can hear how dangerous that statement is. That we could then set up the goal of being the one who's bearing the pain for others. In any kind of heroic or showy way. So I wonder what he means.
And when you asked what moves us, sometimes when I am about to cry, I sneeze instead. And that's what happened in my sock.
I mean, that's what happened just here.
Yeah, just as you asked the question. Because it came to me that when I had my interview with you today, and I was sharing something painful, and you saw it, and for me, what moves me is when I bear, not necessarily like bear on my back, but bear, like bare naked, my pain. And someone not only helps me to see it, but also see the gift in that. And that moves me. And that moved me under the tree or behind the house. And it also moved me when you asked the question. Mm. And so I sneezed.
maybe part of that noticing that we already bear the pain of others. And being willing to stay there, not to freak out. So not like a moving forward to try to catch your pain from you. So then, it's interesting just what he said is suffering is not overcome by leaving pain behind. So then the difference between suffering and pain, where there's I find quite a helpful thing in the Buddhist tradition, even though it got formulated into a list, which I think dims the helpfulness of the information. So it's the eight worldly conditions. And what it means is this is what happens if you're in the world, that there is pain and there is pleasure. And so then, if I'm not preoccupied with trying not to have the pain for me, then I'm available for the fact that pain is happening, but not a problem. Whereas if I'm worried that I might have some painful experience, and I know that I will, I'm going around so defended that I am causing suffering inside and outside. And so the prejudices start to build. There's another lovely line that I found helpful from my tradition, from the Sanskrit text that I'm in love with, called the Yoga Vasishta. There are like 1,000 lines from the same book that I also love. The teacher is talking to the student, and the student happens to be God. And so God's teacher is saying, this is God before he gets enlightened. The teacher just points out that when we can meet someone without referring to past experience in the meeting, so there's not any sense of, well, yesterday you didn't smile at me, or etc., or how more severe that gets on this planet. And then there's that curious way that when we're not defending ourselves against the imagined pain, so we're bearing, B-A-R-I-N-G, and then we can see, we're enabled to see that it is pain, that it doesn't necessarily need to be suffering. But still, there is pain. Here we are meeting, and it's pain. And it somehow, doesn't it like draw the heart out and together? One of my teachers who had many, many students who are professional therapists was telling them how more or less useless all their training would be in practice. That what was needed was that meeting out of the role. And that was what was needed. Which doesn't mean, so when we're moved, our skills that have come along can be mobilized and can come in handy. But whatever kind of comes along can be used by that creativity. I thought it was important to talk about how we understand compassion, what we think that is, if we've ever seen it, if felt it.
I'm finding a really hard time connecting with what you're saying because I've had some bizarre experiences with Christianity.
Oh.
And being conservative and then me discovering the come full circle with realizing in the last few months that I am consciousness is mystical Christianity, and it totally blew me away.
Yeah.
But in the beginning, the way I was raised, I never once remembered hearing to love yourself.
Yeah.
Or that you even have a voice inside that's anywhere close to being divine.
Yeah.
And I know there are ways of reading the scripture where that is apparent. And they have, you know, other languages and Gnostic Gospels and all other more expansive. This must be really strong because I'm vibrating like crazy.
You're breaking through
but
it.
But there's so much healing that wants to happen with opening to a Christ consciousness that's not different at all to me, hardly from what you say with Buddhism and these more expansive belief systems. That it was very difficult for me being in a family where, this was just only 2 years ago, the Thanksgiving prayer was, thank you, God, that you love us because we're worth less than a piece of dirt. Of course, I loved her. And it was so toxic that it took me days to recover from being in that atmosphere. So.
Yeah.
And then coming full circle around to me being all and being just an innately, unconditionally lovable light being that I'm a part of, you know, in this grand scale of infinite love. I mean, that's so different. Those ends of Christianity are so far apart. So I'm not sure where the Dalai Lama was, which end he was talking about or...
Which end do you think he was talking about?
Probably the conservative.
The conservative.
Well, I don't think on the less conservative side there's a pain avoidance that there is all of a sudden, I'm out of words, it's a really blank, vibrant, transparent something going on that's real.
So one thing that may have just happened is you were bearing intense sensation that could have been interpreted as painful for the benefit of all beings.
I felt strong, like it was... There's a lot of old grief that wants and is ready for healing, it feels like.
Yeah.
And it feels almost like it's... I'm feeling stars. Really wants people. There's this strong readiness, like there's some kind of platform, like, okay,
yeah.
Let's do this.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure if you hear how you agree with what the His Holiness said, but it doesn't matter. Yeah, it's okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it felt very tender, but I couldn't not read it today. So. It's been there the first day. In this notebook waiting to come out. So, thank you for bearing me. Yeah. Okay. Are you going to speak?
I need to say I'm really struggling right now with this whole form. Mm-hmm. And I just need to get a voice to it in case, well, I guess I can stay in the room. I appreciate what I think you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
My concept of it, I have deep appreciation for, more than I think I'm able to convey in this moment. And I feel like there's been so much tenderness building over the past 3 days. And I know I'm not just talking about my own, like I feel it in this whole group and in the energy that is present in the room when we're sitting and lying and when we're walking and eating. And I feel like when we open up, I don't know that we know how to do this, what you're asking us to do right now, and stay in the energy of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's feeling I don't have a word for it. Just hard, really hard. And yeah. Maybe I don't need to say more than that. I wanna be in it, you know, I wanna keep coming back to the cushion, right? And metaphorically, like I keep trying to re-enter into this experience, and I'm just meeting like the same challenge over and over, which is I feel like there's some spiraling of something that I can't it's too disruptive for where I'm at, so it's like mm-hmm. I want to flee.
Right.
And yeah.
Okay, so do you feel like willingness to go into the word disruptive?
I do.
Okay. Because disruptive is kind of disempowering you and blaming others.
Yeah. I know it sounded very judgmental.
So then, where's the cushion? What you're appreciating is the tenderness.
Yeah.
And you're appreciating that that extraordinary power is kind of pretty much fully in this room. And you'd like to access it just now. Is that the cushion?
Yeah, and it's something about safety also, and knowing that knowing I can stay where I am, and that I don't have to rise to meet something that feels very different from wherever I am, my own sadness, my own whatever,
mm-hmm.
joy. So I think that's also the vision
mm-hmm.
in this case.
Not making yourself do something
yeah.
is the cushion. Mm-hmm.
And not feeling like, yeah. I can't even talk about it anymore.
Okay. Let's see if we can come back to it.
Yeah.
The Buddhist tradition talks about taking refuge. On a lot of Buddhist retreats, that's like a ritual that's done at the beginning where you voice that I take refuge in. Some people would say the Buddha as a person or awakening as human potential. And then taking refuge in the Dharma, which can be defined in so many ways, but I would call it that without which nothing exists. And then taking refuge in the Sangha, which is people whose willingness drew us together. Not only this in this room, but also like this that you can feel the willingness to be moved. And I wasn't sure how this was going to come together, but that was that next thing to come, is to talk about then what is actually Sangha. Because sometimes we are looking for what makes me feel relaxed enough that I can kind of see more clearly and come to more ease, that ease could come with me into more turbulent situations. But there's such a danger of our fear of difference. Also. And I think that there's not like a rule about how to know what is Sangha or what is safety or what is life challenging me, or one danger that I have fallen into so many times is assuming that if I'm in a group that's called spiritual, then everyone thinks like I do. And so, again, I mentioned Papaji, being around Papaji. There was a lot of city shit going on in that satsang group. And another kind of example that's more like a metaphor, but taken from a true story about someone whom I love, who I never met, whom I mention all the time. His name is Jacques. Jacques Lucieron, I don't know if you've heard of him, from France.
Mm-hmm.
He really could be starting at kindergarten in the school curriculum every year. He was blinded at the age of 8 in an accident. And then he was one of the leaders of the resistance, or like the Indian way of saying the independence fighters, or
freedom fighters,
yeah, thank you. But one of the leaders of, like, not just sort of helping with sorting paper clips, but he was one of the leaders of, and was also in prison and then in a camp. And this one part of the story keeps coming into my mind, especially today, yesterday and today, when Jacques is in solitary at first, because they know he's one of the leaders, but they can't believe it because he's blind. And so then he's in a cell with 3 other men who are also jailed for the same reason. So they're all in jail for fighting for freedom. And 2 of them decide that Jacques is blind and the other guy is from a lower class, like a field worker or something like that. And so they're really nasty. And Jacques is, I think he's maybe 18 also. He organized a lot of the youth movement. And so the so-called lower class guy just pointed out to Jacques that he could just let them do what they were going to do anyway. Be nasty. And it came across many times in the book about his youth up to the time that he was freed from the camp. Alive. Like only one of the other leaders. that one of the hardest parts about surviving the concentration camp was what was going on in that sangha inside the camp among the prisoners. So we talk about prejudice and we feel that we must be right. But then if we feel we're right, there's a cost. And somewhere we will be not seeing clearly the people that we think we're right with. Does that make sense? So in spiritual life, we're right because we're spiritual. And then when it's those times that it's me and I'm right, I'm not seeing myself clearly. And what I find curious is after I got over the shock, because this has been really a continual learning process for me, to stop being blind to that kind of nastiness that happens in the spiritual world. When I got over the shock of reading those stories and understanding that it's not that it was we couldn't measure like what's worse, the Nazi people who are holding the camp together or the people inside the camp who are killing each other, sometimes literally. We can't compare, and why would we? But what happened to me when I got over the shock and then kind of accepted, wow, this is us. This is also what could happen to any of us in a concentration camp. And this is also what does happen to us in small ways when we feel trapped. The curious thing that happened was after more acceptance growing about us, I noticed that there starts to be a lightness and a curiosity about wanting to see in myself those characters that were gossiping, they were making up stories and telling people to upset people, and some were killing. So like, not immediately, immediately, maybe a year later I could digest that story, understand this is a true story, and that it's not only true about Jacques and his fellow prisoners. So we're talking again about that space that Jamie mentioned, where the role is aside and there's a bareness that we bear. I think that is the only compassionate moment, compassion for myself as well. I think there's a kind of process where some different steps work together towards dignity. I think dignity and compassion are maybe also the same thing. really accepting that pain is with us and may not be a curse. That pleasure is with us and may not be a problem. That pleasure doesn't give us dignity. The other worldly conditions, success and failure, loss and gain, praise and blame, the Dalai Lama talked about when we're less interested in avoiding our own pain, that's when suffering starts to dissolve. The other way of saying that is when we also don't think that it's going to be success and gain and praise and pleasure that's going to give me dignity. So it's acceptance, of what we actually experience and how painful it can be sometimes, how pleasurable sometimes. I think that when we're less preoccupied with the pain and the pleasure, we can kind of drop down. So Steve mentioned being rooted and dissolving. Acceptance of what we see and what we experience. And confidence in that other kind of pleasure. That's not the pain-pleasure kind of pleasure. And I think then we start to have some confidence that that's the only place to be. And so I'd like to say another thing that Jacques said that he learned when he was a blind child. I just haven't come across such a clear statement about life and about compassion and about dignity. Being blind but still playing with his friends, running around, going to school, and continuing not going to a blind school, not going to a school for children with disabilities, but staying in the school that he had been in. He had to rely on another kind of seeing. And that seeing left him when he tried to be first. It left him when he believed fear. It left him when he got frustrated that he didn't find the key or he couldn't get it in the lock. He said that if he felt frustrated or angry, the key and the lock, or even angrier. So one of the things that Sangha can provide for us is like a studio where we can play with some colors and actually learn what is safe. And what Jacques said was, it wasn't like a moral code. He said, who would need a moral code about right and wrong? If it's that delightful to stay with this joyful seeing, that was a light flowing through him. Today we're talking about describing in this shape. For him to be able to continue living playfully, he didn't have really much other choice than to stay with what happens to be kind and joyful. And the only thing I would say is we're in the same situation. It's just distracting that we can see with our eyes so much. But we know that that real sensing is blind or nearly blind. When we step out of that bare space. And not only that, but that we love that sensing. We love that. It loves us. Loves every one of us with all the differences. And how are we going to live with any differences that we find? Without right and wrong. All night I could not sleep. Because of the moonlight on my bed. This is a poem attributed to a Chinese woman about 2,000 years ago. All night I could not sleep because of the moonlight on my bed. I kept hearing a voice calling. Out of nowhere. Nothing answered.